UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.
Buenas tardes, queridos oyentes, nos estáis escuchando el lunes 27 de noviembre, son las 2 del mediodía. Soy Salah Nueres, el encargado de guiar y moderar el programa de hoy. Durante el capítulo de hoy tenemos con nosotros desde Noruega el profesor Harald Borgevand de la Universidad Østfold University College. Y tenemos con nosotros Irene Belmonte Martín, profesora de Ciencias Políticas y vicedecana del grado de en Ciencias Políticas y Gestión Pública. Y Úrsula Cres, del Servicio de Relaciones Internacionales de la UMH. Este capítulo va a ser en inglés para poder aprender de la experiencia del profesor Harald. Hello everyone and welcome officially to this episode. Today we're gonna speak in English because it's an international episode. Today we have with us the professor of political science, Harald, from the University of Østfold University College. And we have also with us the Professor Irene Belmonte Martin, Professor of Political Science and the Vice Dean of the Political Science Department or the Political Science degree here in the University Miguel Hernández. And we have also Úrsula Cres from the International Department, Department of International Services. And welcome everyone. First of all, we're gonna start with some experience of every one of you about Erasmus, and if we have some technical questions, we have Úrsula with us today. We're gonna start about the experience of Professor Harald from Norway. Can you tell us why did you choose to come to Spain to teach us about the policies over there?
I think the first time I got interested in going to Spain, I think that was when Irene visited us in Norway, and she was teaching on one of my courses, and then we started talking, and we talked more about her stay in Norway, and then we also talked about the possibility for me to go to Spain, and then I thought about it and decided to try. So I think I was here in Spain at Miguel Hernández. Probably for the first time was in 2017 or 2018, now I've been back. I think this is my fourth time, so I've been here four times now.
Four times?
Yeah.
We had the honor to see you last year also and this year. Can you tell us what has been your favorite part of the experience here in Spain?
I've always enjoyed the teaching quite a lot. It's been very interesting to meet all the students. One of the things that I appreciate with the teaching is that the Spanish students tend to ask a bit different questions compared to some of the questions I get from the Norwegian students, and that's something I find that's very interesting and also a bit sort of challenging, because it makes me it forced me to think a bit differently, and sort of it gives a different perspective on the teaching.
When you say they tend to ask different questions, what do you mean by that?
Well, when the Spanish students, they see Scandinavia and Norway sort of from the outside. So they ask, so why is it like that? Why do you do that? Why do you do it that way? Whereas the Norwegian students, they take a lot of things just for granted. They just think this is the only way to do things. This is sort of the normal way to do things. But in politics and in social science, it's not always the case that something is more normal than something else. So there are different countries and different political systems do things differently, and that's also a result of sort of the historical and social development of that particular society. And one of the things I've done here in Elche and Oriola is to explain some of the historical background and some of the social, economic, and historical developments in Scandinavia. And that's also given me an opportunity to look at this in more detail than what I would otherwise do in back in Norway. So that's been very, for me, that's been very stimulating to do.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you, Harald. Yes, it's a pleasure to have you here in Political Science Studies in Orihuela. And I would like to that you explain in more detail what are you teaching about when you are coming to our courses? Because, please,
yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah, mainly it's about the historical, social and political economic development of Scandinavia and some of the similarities and differences between the Scandinavian and Nordic countries. I've talked a bit about the different political systems in the Nordic countries, previously I've also talked a bit about the development of the welfare state and some of the theories and practices surrounding the welfare state, and I've also had a lecture once more on political communication. So it's been a few different topics, but mainly on the historical and the social and political development of the political systems in the Nordic and Scandinavian countries.
Here with us in this conversation, you are not the only professor that has an Erasmus experience. We have also the professor and vice dean of the political department here in La OMH, Irene. Can you tell us more about your experience of Erasmus? Where did you give lectures and what was your experience up there?
My experience as Erasmus exchange professor, it has been in Norway. As Harald said, I have visited Norway, his Oslo University College, so many times. I don't remember exactly how many times, but I have to say it's a trust relationship. We have a very trustful relationship, and I've been in Uppsala University as well, and I have to say Uppsala in Sweden. Both universities, in Scandinavia, they are quite different, because Uppsala is the oldest university in the Nordic countries. It's a very huge university. Last year, it was celebrating the 400 years of the political science department. It's a strong department, but when I'm visiting Norway, I feel so comfortable as well. I feel so comfortable in both universities. Oslo University College is a quite new university, like our university, like University Miguel Hernández. I would say small but good, yeah? And together, and it's different. It's even in in the Norwegian University, I have the chance to write some articles or to join some dozen projects with some colleagues. I have written with Harald colleague in some articles, and as well we have an international project in the PRODIC with it is called intercultural learning. You know, you remember Salah, last year we were with Berit and other Norwegian students. That's all these activities is because I went to Norway. I went to that university. We started some relation. We start talking. We start thinking about what can we do together. And I think that we have so much to do now.
From both your experience, Erasmus is a very good thing for professors. They can do it. They should do it. And it is an amazing thing. Not just Erasmus, every exchange program. So how can professors, this is a question for Ursula, how can professors do an Erasmus or an exchange program? And why should they do that?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. And
thank you for assisting.
Yeah, well, a professor who wants to do an exchange, the first thing he needs is a contact with this university he wants to visit. And was wondering, because it's easy to find Uppsala University, but how Irene found out about your college, the Østfold University College. Maybe you can tell that later. And once they have a contact, they develop a program, either for teaching or for training. Teaching is what both of our professors here do. They do a minimum of 8 hours teaching at the host university. Or training could be, if they went there, to study how things are done in that other institution. So both of them. And this is put down in a so-called mobility agreement. We have a mobility agreement for students, as you may know, and teachers also have a mobility agreement with the with basically three main aspects. One is the last one would be the goals and the expected outcome. In the middle is the program itself, and at the beginning, the person interested has to develop why, the reason, what benefit are expected from this. And this is signed by the professor, and let me say that also for the administrative staff can use the same program to move and visit other universities within the Erasmus. Both, and that's basically, they have to wait until there's a call, which is being, I think, right now at the end of the process. I think there's a list now, and there will be another call next year for the second part of this academic year.
So, as I said, you have worked with a lot of professors and doing this exchange, and they all have so many good experience. In your opinion, why the professors why should they join this type of programs?
Well, it has not always been like this. At the beginning, it was very difficult to convince our professors, our faculty, to take part in this activity. But I think now everybody sees the advantages of being in an international program, the benefits for their curriculum and the personal development as well. And it's always a challenge. And we have the benefit of being a young university with young professors who are more eager to experiment new things.
To piggyback the question of Ursula, how did you get in contact with each other's universities? Harris said because you visited them. How did you know about their university?
I have to say, my first experience was in Uppsala. Was great experience. So I wanted to repeat again. And I wanted to have new experiences. So I sent, what I done is to send my application or my invitation email to the list of the university that I watched that the University Miguel Hernández had a kind of agreement, Erasmus agreement. So I sent, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 emails. I don't remember how many emails. And what happened? That some emails never were answered. Never, never, never. Some emails were answered, no, we are not interested in this moment. Maybe you can try in another department or whatever. And always, always the Nordic countries say yes. And that happened with the Oswald University College. I sent my email to a general, you know, a general email address. And they go, oh, we are interested in your proposal. So get in touch with Geir Tafte. Geir Tafte brought me immediately. So Geir Tafte is a retired political science professor at Oswald. And we start talking. When is the best time for you to go there? And then, so sometimes it's hard. Don't discourage if you receive some negative answer or unexpected answer. Just continue. That was the beginning of the relationship between these universities.
And what did you do in the other university, the Sweden one? What did you do in the first exchange program?
Yes, I was teaching as well. I was teaching.
But teaching a semester or teaching a few classes?
No, teaching. No, the Erasmus exchange program for professor is just 1 week. So we have to teach at least 8 hours. I think that when I started, it was 5.
Yeah.
And now it's 10?
8.
8 hours. And I have to say that those were my first lectures in English. And I prepared a lot. I remember the University Miguel Hernández has a language program or something like that. And I was practicing my English with with the colleague. And in this time, I was teaching in a course about comparative welfare states, and I was talking about the Spanish welfare state. And do you remember the equality law? And I was teaching about the equality, Spanish equality law, with the Swedish, not only Swedish, they were international students. And I have a very, I don't know if they... Okay, I will say in the radio, because there was an Australian student. Of course, he speaks perfect English, but with a very strange accent for me, and I didn't understand.
Interesting.
The questions. At least my Swedish colleague translated his Swedish English to me, so I could answer. I could answer. So it's a challenge. It's a big challenge.
Yes.
You have to prepare a lecture for students that I don't know. You don't know, but it's worth it. It's worth it because I have repeated so many times.
Something that we are always curious about when they visit us, professors from outside. For example, Harald, how many other countries did you visit as a professor? Did you do lectures before you come to Spain?
I've been to Poland and China and also to Kyrgyzstan, which is which was quite an experience. So I think, those are the countries where I've been a visiting lecturer.
In China, you gave classes in English?
Yes, that's right, in English.
And how was the experience there?
That was also a very interesting trip. That was in 2010, and that was actually... I left for China. I think it was the day after I had my PhD viva. So I defended my PhD thesis, and then the day after I traveled to China. So I was there for about 10 days, 2 weeks, and I was teaching at 3 universities in Beijing. I was supposed to teach more on sort of research methods and more sort of general topics in social science. But some of the students, they wanted to talk more about democracy and sort of other topics. And that was a bit controversial, obviously. So the professor from the Chinese university, he said, "Well, we're not going to
that's what so I much into that." They gave you some instruction before visiting Spain, before visiting China, about you were allowed to talk about this and not allowed to talk about that, or something like.
No, not really. I didn't feel sort of a lot of. That there were a lot of restrictions, really. I felt I could talk quite freely with the students and also with the professors. But we sort of in the lecture, they didn't really want to talk so much about democracy and so on. But we did actually talk about democracy for a bit. So it wasn't. I think it's probably a bit more restricted now, but this was in 2010, and it's been quite a big change at Chinese universities since then. So it's my experience. I've been to China a number of times, my experience was that when I went there for the first time in 2005 or 2006. The country was sort of opening up a bit more, but then gradually, and it was opening gradually more and more. And then last time I was in China, 2014, I felt it was sort of becoming a bit more restricted, and just sort of instead of opening up, it was sort of closing in a bit more. So it's been over the last 15, 20 years in China, sort of being a country where they tried to and wanted to open up, and then they have been sort of been going in the opposite direction, at least the last 10, 12 years.
How many times you have been there? You have visited there?
Let me think, 6, 7 times, maybe.
That's really nice. Mm. That's really nice. And how many countries, Irene, did you visit outside of the... Norway and Sweden? Did you visit other countries?
For the Erasmus exchange, no. Yes, in
Norway. No, countries. But as a political science professor, or as a professor in general.
As a professor, no. Yes, the Nordic countries. But I have to say that in the academia, we have the chances, the opportunities to visit other universities, especially during the International Congress.
What is that?
For example, last International Political Science Congress was this summer in Buenos Aires, in Argentina.
Interesting.
So we visit the Universidad Nacional Argentina as well.
Very cool.
And that's the opportunity to get in touch with other professors. And maybe if we are in an international congress, we realize, we notice that we have topics research topic together is an opportunity to create an agreement between both universities in the international congress as well. Yeah,
that's really cool. So I'm gonna come back to your question from before. Where do you come to another country, Irene or Hala? Do you prepare some lectures only for these countries that you are visiting, when you have the same lectures prepared for everybody and you say the truth no matter how it is, or you like try to soften it or change it, depends on the country?
No, usually with the other partner, because when you move, when you do this teaching exchange, you have to adapt to the course in the other country. So usually, we agreed about the topic, the contents. But I know that as here in University Miguel Hernández, we are interested in what's the Scandinavian politics. I know that in Norway, in Sweden, they are interested about the Spanish politics, or maybe on in the course of comparative politics, in the course of comparative politics as well, maybe I can compare some politics in about Spain or Italy or whatever. Yeah, but mostly it's about the Spanish politics, Spanish political system.
So, and Harald, when you come to Spain and you said like the students of Spain has like some special questions, when did you went back to Spain from the first time to the second time? Did you try to change a little bit the type of information you are given or the type of the way you are given the classes?
But as Irene said, it depends mainly on the type of course where you're teaching. So my focus is mainly on sort of adapting to the course where I'm teaching. So that's the most important thing. And some of the questions can sometimes also be a bit hard to anticipate or sort of to because sometimes the students also ask some unexpected questions. So those questions most often it's impossible to prepare for some of those questions. So you just have to.
I just remember from yesterday the student that asked you about something very local and she wanted to know your opinion about it. That's really interesting. So. Like your the experience of both of you has been amazing in Erasmus or in exchange programs in general, and we're gonna use the fact that we have Ursula with us today. We're gonna and a lot of students are listening to us right now, so we're gonna try to like the same experience of both of you. The students can live themselves if they go outside of their countries and they study specially, because from my example, I didn't do an exchange program, but I came here to study from Morocco. I came to Spain and the experience was really amazing. Like I took my political knowledge and my political and or my academic knowledge or my knowledge, my personality, everything to the next level. And I feel so I appreciate the experience so much. So Ursula, what can you tell to the students of the University of Miguel Hernández, how can they go to an exchange program and how can they choose the university where they want to go? Everything that you can help us with that, please.
Well, in general, the experiences are very good for our students. They come back and they come back changed. They personally, they mature, they develop skills they would not develop when staying here. The challenge of being in a different country with a different language, but not just the language, it's the culture and everything about that. And yes, we do have many students. I think last course there were about 300 of our students going on the Erasmus program. But you have to be prepared, and being prepared does not mean that, okay, you have to be good in English, obviously. But if you are only learning English, you narrow your possibilities, because there are many other countries, interesting countries, good universities, who don't have a program in English. For example, UMH does not have too many programs or subjects taught in English. So if you want to go to France, you need to know French. And even if you go to Sweden or Norway, where you have classes that are taught in English, the people around you in your regular life, they will, most of them know English, but it's also good to know some of the local language always. So that's one of the barriers maybe to the students. The other one is that the money is not very abundant. It's just to cover for an extra cost, and not everybody. You can move and go to the exchange without any other help, economic help. but you've got the assistance from the university. That means that whatever you do there will be recognized at the UMH. It's not like you have to negotiate. That's negotiation takes place in advance. You see the program, and that's what you have to study, not just if it's a nice environment, it's if there are good parties, which is, of course, also an important fact.
But the social part of every exchange program is very important.
Yes, and they usually do a lot of traveling. Well, you have a student in Italy, and somehow he ends up in Poland sending greetings from wherever. That's part of the experience, but you have to look into the program of the university if there are subjects that match your interests and your profile at the university here.
Thank you. Something else that us students are very curious about, as political science students, we are very curious, how did the political science professors choose their career? How did you guys choose to be a professor of political science? This is something that I really see as me as a political science, I see as something really amazing. I'm really interested to know, how did you, we'll start with Harald, how did you choose to be a professor, or how did you choose to study political science, political sciences in general?
For almost as long as I can remember, I've always been interested in what's happening in society, in politics, history. And those were my favorite subjects in school. So I always found those subjects very, very fascinating. And I remember even when I was quite young, 10, 12 years, I always watched the news on TV and so on. And at home, we always discussed politics and history and different sort of topics related to what's happening in society during when we had dinner and things like that. So it's always been something that I've been interested in. But when I before I went to university, I also liked biology and chemistry. So for me, the choice was between the social science or the natural sciences. And then I ended up with social science. And that was mainly because I was very interested in political philosophy. And that's also my main area within political science as well. So when I got interested in political philosophy, and that was probably when I was 18, 20, I knew right away that this is what I actually want to do. This is what I want to work with. So then I just decided I want to do a PhD, and I want to be an academic, and I want an academic career. And then I did my first degree at the University of Oslo, politics and economics. And then I went to...
You have more than one PhD? Or?
No, I have just one PhD. Okay. That's more than enough. But my first degree, my undergraduate
degree was in
politics and economics. And then I went to the UK and did my MA in political philosophy at the University of York. And I stayed on at the University of York to do my PhD as well. So I stayed there for 4 years in total. And then I finished in 2009 and started working in Bergen as a lecturer, and had my viva in a few months later in 2010. And then, so I just decided this is what I want to do, and then I did it.
That's really amazing. Before we continue with Irene, we have to take a small break. Pues tras esta primera parte damos paso a un pequeño espacio publicitario para la vuelta a seguir con mucho más debate. Volvemos en 2 minutos. Muchas gracias.
Solo quiero que se me recuerde como una persona que quería ser libre. Rosa Parks.
8 de marzo, todos los días.
¿Tienes una empresa y te gustaría digitalizar tu negocio?
¿Sabes que puedes recibir ayudas económicas para contratar a una persona que te ayude en este proceso de transformación digital?
El programa Generación Digital de Agentes del Cambio de FEMPA busca ayudar a pymes a impulsar su proceso de digitalización. Para ello ofrece subvenciones dirigidas a la contratación de agentes del cambio.
Estos son profesionales que se han formado a través del programa Generación Digital Agentes del Cambio y que cuentan con los conocimientos y habilidades necesarias para liderar el proceso de transformación digital de una empresa o pyme.
¿Quieres más información? Entra en la web fempa.es y conoce todos los detalles de estas ayudas.
Welcome back to the show. We are going to continue with our guests. And now we started with the experience of Harald. Now we're going to go back to the experience of Irene. How did you choose to be a political science professor or a political science student in general? How did you choose to give classes in politics?
Okay, more or less it's the same experience. When I was a kid, I always liked politics or what was happening around in the society. But actually, when I finished the high school, I didn't know how to study. So, well, I decided to do a pragmatic studies, economics and both politics studies. So that's why my degree. But when I was getting more mature, I think that it is not enough. I want more. I want to study more. I want to know more about what's happening in the society, what's happening in the politics, what's happening in the institutions. So I decided to do the PhD programs, studies, and I as well studied a master. And after that, I decided to do a PhD, and I contacted a professor in the University of Alicante, and he was my mentor. He is my mentor, actually, but now he's retired.
What did you do the master's in?
I did a master in public administration. It was about public administration. I don't remember exactly the number, but it was about politics.
Politics, okay. Public politics.
I have the two masters, but the real master I took it was about the public administration. So
you got in touch with your mentor in the University of Alicante.
Of Alicante, and I told him, I'm thinking about doing my PhD. And he told me, okay, I'm professor of public management, so think about it. So we started keeping in touch, and I started doing my PhD. But I have to say that when I was doing my PhD, I started here as a part-time professor. Then I changed to the permanent position, to a full-time position. So I was getting the promotion while I was doing my PhD. I remember it was a very hard time because I was teaching or in a new job. It was a new experience for me, teaching. And I have to say it took me a lot of time to prepare 1 hour teaching. It takes a lot of time. And at the same time, I was writing my PhD. And as well, my kids were very small, were very young. And now I think, I don't know how I could do all those things I did. But I got it. Now I finished my PhD. It was, for me, it was a very important
day. How much time did it take you to finish your PhD?
It took me around more or less three years. And my PhD, there is a book, Umberto Eco has a book about how to do a PhD. And I could write a book about how
to do a PhD with
all the things that you don't have to do, but I did it all. Because my PhD, I have to say, it was done during the summer period, in Christmas period, in Easter period, because it was, I have enough time to think, to write, to have a lot of pages. And
to advance a little bit.
Yeah, to advance. And finally, when the Spanish university, I think that's international, when you got the PhD, I started the promotion. And I have to say that I loved teaching. And as well, I love the research activities.
So this is a curiosity that I have about professors of university in Norway, for example, or in the north of Europe, that you have more information about. Do professors can be professors without having a PhD, or they have to have it? Or
no, you definitely need a PhD.
But can you give some classes without having a PhD or something?
Yes, it's possible to be a university lecturer without a PhD. But that's normally for just junior lecturers and mostly temporary positions. But today, I think you definitely need a PhD just to be shortlisted for any academic job. On top of that, you also need publications and teaching experience and also maybe some administrative experience as well, that you have organized a conference or a workshop and things like that. So I think this is probably true for most of Western countries, that you need a PhD today
But this is to have the title of a professor. I'm asking about to give classes in general.
To give classes, you don't necessarily need to be a professor.
Okay.
But I think in most universities today, you will be an assistant professor, associate professor, or lecturer before you will be promoted to a senior lecturer or full professor. So there is sort of so it's mainly for the junior positions that you might be lucky to get an academic job without a PhD.
That's really interesting. So I'm gonna take the chance again that we have Ursula with us here. I want to know, or we want to know as students, do the Department of International Relations has any kind of plans for the future of the exchange in the universities here or something like that? For example, for the students of La Umiachi or for the students coming to La Umiachi? Does the department has some kind of plans for that in the future?
Well, the plans are marked by the university itself in the strategy of the university, and they strongly talk about internationalization of the UMH. So within this context, we visit fairs, we visit conferences, we promote our university in order to attract other students or teachers to come here. And, of course, we also invite our students to information sessions about the possibilities they have, because it's not just the Erasmus program, although this is the most well-known one. But we also have another one, which is Destino, and you can also get an exchange. And these are normally countries which are not within the Erasmus program.
Outside of the EU or stuff?
Sorry?
Outside of the EU.
Yeah, well, or in a country where you cannot go because it's European. Yeah. Okay.
Outside of the European
exactly,
Union.
Yes, yeah.
Well, because I think Erasmus, I'm not sure, Erasmus is a program of the European Union or Council or something.
Yeah, well, recently in the last year, it has been extended, and we've got a program. We talk about K3131, which is the usual Erasmus program with all the member states. And then there is another one, which used to be 107, with associated countries. They are not in the EU, but you can sign Erasmus contracts. And recently there's been like an international program where you can also move outside all these boundaries. And the Destino is just different because we have many, many contacts with
Latin American stuff.
Exactly. With Ibero-America. Yes.
Yeah. We have in our university, we usually have a lot of students from Mexico, yes, from Chile, from everywhere around South America. And we have some students that they visit Argentina, I guess, or something. So I'm going to take the chance again that we have Irene with us here, the head of the Department of Politics. Do we have any future plans for the political departments? What do we have as students of political science to look for in the next few years?
Yeah, as well, in the frame of the UMH internalization, internationalization, the faculty, I'm not a head of the department. I'm a vice dean in the faculty.
What?
I'm vice dean.
Ah, vice dean.
I'm vice dean of the faculty of social science.
I say department because we are doing a program in English, so yeah, it is more easy to say it in English. But I understand that you are the vice dean of the degree of political science and public management.
In the faculty of social sciences, of law.
In Orihuela. I understand. Thank you for the clarification.
So, in the faculty, we have a plan to internalize the faculty. And I have to say that especially the degree, the political science studies, we are receiving so many students. There are many students from Italy. This semester, we have four students from Italy, from Rome, from Catania. The last year we had a student from Mexico and Chile and I think Peru as well. But I would like to encourage, thank you Salah for the question, because I would like to encourage the Spanish students to go abroad. In the index, we are much more ingoing faculty or studies. We attract much more student from abroad. That I don't know what's the problem, why the Spanish students don't want to go to other country, but I encourage them to go there.
Yeah, I think the problem is the language barrier, I think. And I can only confirm, this is on Europe-wide statistics, that Spain is more intaking country. And like Germany, they are sending out a lot of students. Why is that so? Well, I don't know. We can only try to make make it more interesting for Spanish students to go abroad, and make them see the advantages.
Mm-hmm. Probably young students like from around Europe or around the world, they see Spain as a destination because it is very touristic. And it is very like the social part of being an exchange student is really interesting to be here in Spain. And as you said, also for the South American students, they come here, but they go around Europe to visit all of Europe. They visit France, Italy, and everything in between. They visit all of Europe, and they visit Southern Ireland, and they visit everything. Like the last year, the students from Chile, they visited all of Europe. They visited the countries that I didn't even hear about before. So that was interesting. And that was really interesting to hear. So we're going to take another chance because we have Harald with us here. And he gave us two years on the row some interesting, very interesting lectures about the Nordic countries and about the politics over there. And as we are political interested, me and Irene, we are really politically interested about that. And we're gonna try to learn from Harald a little bit the rest of the time that we have. And you had in your lecture a really important part that I really loved. How did you frame it? You had in your lecture, what can the world learn from studying Scandinavian politics? Can you tell us, please?
Firstly, you have to bear in mind that the politics that you see in Scandinavia is a result of social, historical, and political and economic development peculiar to Scandinavia. So it's never easy to just copy something from one country to another. So you could say that the short answer is that, well, it's not that much the rest of the world can learn from Scandinavia, because what we see in Scandinavia today is a result of a long historical development. But having said that, there are a few things that I think can be highlighted and that could perhaps be a bit of a bit more in, general interest. And one of the points that I find quite important when I look at the development, the political development in Scandinavia, is that and this is more or less true for the entire region, that's how unions, how corporations, big companies, and the government, how these three actors have been able to work together. They have been able to find common ground, and they have been able to find solutions to everyone's advantage. And that's a very, I think that's a very important principle underlying also democracy, that the most important political groups in a society feel they receive some kind of mutual advantage from participating in democracy. And what happened in Scandinavia over the last 7-8 decades is also that workers and unions, they required and wanted higher salaries. And that led to a lot of conflicts initially, because the big corporations didn't initially want to offer higher salaries because they had to be competitive and so on. But through long strikes and conflicts, eventually the unions and the employers, the big corporations, they realized that to make this work, we have to find better ways of doing this. We have to work together. And we have to, the employers, the big companies, they realized we have to offer the workers decent and good salaries. But then the workers, they have to be educated. They have to be, they need healthcare, education, and so on, so they can be more productive. And that's sort of the key to understand development in Scandinavia, at least in my view, that it all comes down to economic growth and productivity, because higher salaries and higher productivity meant that the companies were competitive, even if they had to pay higher salaries, because the workers were more efficient. They could produce more when they were working. And that's a very important point. So I think one of the lessons one could learn from Scandinavia is sort of the importance of economic growth and productivity.
And some of the things that you were talking about during your lecture were historic stuff that happened during the last 1,000 years. And as I said, I watched the series The Vikings on the History Channel, I guess. Do you think doing your rounds around the world, do you think that people now are more interested and they know more about the history of the Scandinavian countries thanks to the series? Do you think that people now understand more about the Vikings or the Norway, the history of Norway, thanks to the Vikings?
I think definitely that a lot of people are more, perhaps more interested in Scandinavia and in the history of Scandinavia because of the TV series about the Vikings. The problem, however, is that a TV show is always fiction, and it doesn't really represent the historical development, the actual historical development of Scandinavia. Some of the names, some of the kings are sort of referring to actual places and actual persons. But mostly it's fiction. And rape and pillaging is not very... It's not a good thing, not even for Vikings.
So, I ask you personally during your lecture, why do you think that Norway and Sweden and the other countries are now one of the countries, or both, one of the countries, I don't know how to say it, the countries more advanced socially and the quality of life and the happiness of people and studying and the studies? Why Finland, Sweden, Denmark and Norway are the best countries in the world in social stuff and economic stuff? How did they get, without ruining other countries, without the foreign policies that go do whatever you want back there and come back with democracy, without anything of that, how did they get to that?
I think when you look at many of those rankings, there are some limitations with those rankings as well. I think lots of Norwegians, they want to live in Spain, and lots of Norwegians do live in Spain. So it's not necessarily the case that Scandinavia is the best part to live in the entire world. I think one thing that you can say that is probably to some extent true for many of the countries on many of the rankings. If you look at many of the rankings, countries like Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, Scandinavian countries are often listed on some of the rankings when it comes to GDP standards of living. And something that is to some extent true for all those countries is that they have been stable. They had a stable political development, and they, partly because of geographical location, like New Zealand, Australia, and Scandinavia, they've not been part of big political conflicts and wars as many other European countries, for example, and other parts of the world. And I think that's sort of the stability is an important factor as well.
And thank you so much, Mr. Harald and Professor Harald, for all of this information. I was really interested before, and I'm still interested to hear more from you. I hope you're gonna visit us again next year. Thank you, Irene, for organizing this episode. It was your idea to do this collaboration between the departments. It was very amazing to do it. Thank you so much for giving us the idea and giving us your time. I know you are very busy. You are one of the most important professors in our degree. Thank you, Ursula, for visiting us and for giving us the opportunity to hear from your expertise and hear from all of your expertise about the international relationship. I am Salah Nweri. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next week. Again.
UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.